John's first sign. And John is about the signs, not miracles, even when they are miracles. Now, there's a lot going on here, and contrary to where your memory might be of this passage or hearing it, a reference to it at weddings, in the Episcopal rite for weddings, it isn't really about God's stamp of approval on marriage. As sort of a side note, that's actually the use of this lesson as a kind of counter to an idea that occurred in medieval Catholic Christianity, that somehow being clergy or monk or nun was somehow better. To be a celibate was better than to be married, meaning like a better Christian. That those were really first-class Christians and everybody else, including those monks and priests and nuns' parents, were somehow second class. So this was, the reformers had none of this, weren't buying this argument. Martin Luther thought that marriage was just as much a vocation, and perhaps more so than any other vocation, because that's where our Christian formation happened. So there's a little push and pull going on in having that in our marriage rite. But I don't actually think it's about marriage, really. I think it's about the wedding. Weddings were back then, as they are now, a big deal. But they were back then a really big deal. They reflected on the whole family, the entire extended family. One was honor bound to start off a marriage rite by an enormous feast, usually a multi-day event, with lots and lots and lots, did I say lots of wine? Lots. And this account today is early in the celebration. The celebration went on for a whole week. And you know, somebody really needs to fire that wedding planner because they're already out of wine. And this did not bode well for the young couple's future. It would be a major shame to the entire family. And in the honor shame culture of the day, that was a big deal. Wine, you see, wasn't just about partying. It signified abundance and blessing, hospitality, all of those good things. And its absence signified the absence of those things. So Jesus and at least some of the disciples show up. And Jesus' mother, who's never named, by the way, in John's Gospel, gives him the mom out of shame. They have no wine. And kind of puzzling to scholars is Jesus' response. He actually sounds kind of grumpy. Now, there's more here in the story than just an incident at a wedding with some probably distant relative. Our passage starts out on the third day. On the third day. Get it? Third day. Like Jesus' resurrection, which happened on the third day. John's hearers would have gone, third day, get it? Jesus' answer to his mother is also a little clearer when you think of it in the context of conveying another message. Woman, what concern is that to you and me? My hour has not yet come. Well, in John's Gospel, Jesus' hour is how he speaks over and over about the crucifixion. And his mother tells the servants, do what he tells you. They fill these giant jugs, water jugs, full of water, right up to the brim. And wine. Good wine. Much nicer than what they've observed. And lots of it. A very conservative estimate is something like 120 gallons. That's a lot of wine. Way more than they need. This amazing abundance is just there. Nobody but the servants, disciples, and maybe Jesus' mother knows what happened, where it came from. Astonishing abundance in response to their need. Now, this marriage wedding metaphor is used to tell something important about God's relationship with humanity. It's not new in St. John's Gospel. Our first reading from the Hebrew Scriptures uses the same marriage metaphor for God's relationship with Israel. Now, the book of the prophet Isaiah was actually written in three parts. And this is from the last part. It's after the people have been in exile, displaced for a couple of decades, and then finally allowed to go back home again. And it was a new metaphor. It had been used by Hosea and Jeremiah and Lamentations and one of the earlier Isaiah writers. But here, the new slant is that God promises Zion, she will have a new name. Her previous desolation is acknowledged, but now she's named as God's delight. This is to reunite the people who have been scattered in exile, those who have remained while everyone else got taken away and lived somewhere else, and those younger folks who had never known Jerusalem before the exile. And nothing they do about their efforts to set up government, temple worship, social organizations, none of that is involved in becoming God's beloved. They're just named, my delight is in her. It's purely God's initial word, God's initiative for the sheer love of it. And our psalm today even does the same thing. It's all about the breadth, the depth, and the height of God's love for God's people. And even St. Paul, and now he's a guy who really loves a long, complicated explanation, but he's pretty clear today. He's telling the church in Corinth, you have what you need. You have what you need. Everything. Complete. Together, y'all got this. And these gifts, these capabilities, aren't your personal possession, aren't for your personal betterment, but for the good of the community at large. One gift is not better than another, just different. All together, they're for the work of the church. A free gift. Actually, isn't it kind of sad that we have to say free gift these days? But it's free. It's a gift for the entire community. And the word he uses, gift, that's a translation of it, but it also carries over tones of grace. So, grace, gift, gift, grace. Now, you may have heard the term, the charnel feast, kind of churchy word. If you go to Italy or somewhere else where the Roman Catholic Church is big, you can find a big celebration on a day dedicated to the saint that the church or the town is named for. And Episcopal churches sometimes do this too. So like St. Paul's might celebrate next week around the time of the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. St. James might celebrate in July when that feast day is. Church named Ascension or Transfiguration or Trinity might celebrate special celebration on those days. For some churches, it's a little harder, like Good Shepherd. Mm-hmm. But we always read that lesson on the Lord's Sunday after Easter. Well, what about grace? When's our patrol feast or our feast day? Do we know?